You are listening to Tempest in a Stockpot. I'm Christine Bruce.
And I'm Brenda Barrett.
And together we're agitating for change in Northern BC. We're calling this episode Raising Hope, where we explore the notion of training the next generation in being competent eaters, just like the pine marten, and on being aware of their own body's wants and needs, while considering what's available. Joining us is Hélène Fleury from Groundbreakers Agricultural Association in Smithers. Time to check that pot and see what's cooking. One creature that's ubiquitous to northern BC, yet you won't see it often, is the pine marten. Small, quiet, unobtrusive, beautiful. As omnivores, their eating habits are adaptable and opportunistic. Depending on the season, they eat fruit, nuts, insects, fungi, even small birds and mammals. They play a vital role in spreading seeds. And because their diets are diverse, they help maintain a balanced food chain, regulating populations. As a direct result of their eating habits, the pine marten is considered a keystone species. You'd never find a picky eater among the pine marten population. You might call them competent eaters, whose attitudes are positive and flexible, relying on hunger and fullness cues when deciding what to eat, rather than following restrictive diets. This approach means they can rely on having more regular meals based on a variety of foods, and being matter-of-fact in their eating habits. The outcome is a positive relationship with food and a healthier, more balanced habitat. Hélène Fleury is a prominent community member in Smithers. When I first met Hélène, she was the principal at École des Grandes Ours, Smithers' first French elementary school. She has served as the executive director and secretary treasurer of Groundbreakers Agriculture Association, a nonprofit organization in Smithers, where she helped expand food security programs for elementary school students. Hélène Fleury holds a master's degree in environmental education.
Wow, there's a lot of kids who do not know what vegetables look like in the garden. They know what they look like in the supermarket. When Groundbreakers started, it was called the Groundbreakers Collective, a monthly harvest box program, pulling in the different producers in the valley. It's like a really neat harvest box program. Gail Jenny, who was a founding member, as well as Mark Fisher, Aaron Hart, and Emily McGiffin, they were interested in having an education arm, particularly Gail, because she had worked with children in the garden and just loved how the children had awe for potatoes or for things popping out. And so they decided to invite different community members, and I was one of them. Jennifer Hegan was another one, and Yannick from the dairy farm in Quick was also invited. We actually got charitable status. The philosophy and the vision around educating children and youth, and sometimes adults, because now we're into the community workshops, for me, first and foremost, was to get the children outside. And schools are great for many, many things, but the outside seems far. Sometimes field trips are complicated. They cost money. It's overwhelming. And even I, just like a total outside person, I embody being outside. And as a teacher, I'm like, I'm not going outside with 25 students. Like, it's chaos. I had to like be in that right frame of mind. And so that was one of my goals, was to make it easier for the teachers to have access to the outdoors. We're here to come and help. Anybody want a workshop in the school? And, you know, that was an easy sell. It was free based on our grant and funding. So we were bringing the outside to the teachers. The long and short of why this started is to help people like me who are like, I want to go outside, but I can't do it on my own. And I don't know everything about, in this case, gardening. But eventually, I'm like, we can push this a little bit. Let's take them to the forest and look what the food is in the forest. And that became the wild food program. I would say there's so many beautiful nuggets of joy in the garden for an adult. I always remember that the children who've never planted a potato or never dug for a potato, that feeling of awe. And it's awe for me to see them having awe. It's like this long domino effect. But for sure, there's many of those. Also, like I call them the feelings of first. the first time that they see a cauliflower tucked in there, and they're like, what? There's a cauliflower. I'm like, but it's kind of funny. Like, they've never seen a cauliflower. So those are important feelings of first for sure, but also important knowledge. You know, what does a leek look like in a garden? It kind of looks like a green onion. And then you get into refining those skills as the years go and they age into our little system.
Is there something special or unique about your school gardens program? Is there a broader impact that these programs are having on the children and their broader community?
So we want more local food to be grown, and we want more local food to be bought. And so there's three ways to see it with children. Is they will themselves grow more, whether it's in schools or at home or both. They will ask their parents to grow more and to learn those skills if they have the space. I mean, we have community gardens in Telkwa and Smithers and Whitsett. There's space where people share their backyards. So there's that. But there's also, hey, BV Wholesale has Johag produce, or Out of Hand now. That didn't used to exist when we started a program, but you can get local food at these places. There's also farm gate sales. You know, there used to be the regional district directory of farmers who did farm gate sales. And I think it's still available. It just needs to be updated. That kind of resource, we try to give to the parents through the children at school. Because I do believe that if we can grow it here, we don't need to have it transported here. Like, there's the whole climate question. There is a nutrition question as well. Like, of course, the carrot that's just been taken out of the garden at the school will be more nutritious than the one that comes from California. And it will taste really good. I'm going to go tangent to the carrot, because we've done carrot taste tests. You know, I would walk into the grocery store and find like the prettiest carrot, like a non-organic carrot from China. And then I'd have a California carrot, and then I'd have like a local carrot. Could have been from Jonathan and Kispiox, or could have been from Joe Hug. And so we do these taste tests, like blind, you know, 1, 2, 3, you got it. And it's always the local one that wins. Like, even though, and actually, you know what, we did, which one looks better? Well, and sometimes this is in February and March, like the carrot has been stored in a fridge or in a root cellar. And inevitably, the Chinese carrot wins for the looks. It's beautiful. It's colorful. But the local carrot always wins for taste, like 10 times out of 10. And then the kids are just like, oh, but it didn't look very good. I'm like, there are ugly vegetables, but they taste good and they are nutritious. So there's just so much about what the kids are learning. And in an education phrase, I would say the kids are learning skills. So identification, planting, what's a weed, what's not a weed, how to seed save, how to make food from the garden, like so many recipes that we've tried. But also this attitude, like we're talking about ugly vegetables. Yeah, it's ugly. Let's peel it, cut it, take off the bad spots. And, or, you know, kids who've never eaten broccoli, and then we make a nice broccoli soup, and they're like, no, I don't eat green things. Well, just humor me, have a teaspoon, right? Oh, it's not that bad. And so the attitude, I think, is what will help us in the long term. Is they want to taste more, they want to know more. Hey, I might actually try a Brussels sprout. It's kind of a cool plant to see it grow, you know? And so we did the 2-meter diet, garden to kitchen. And we had like art in the garden. And then we had, it was a 3-course meal at lunch, including a dessert that was made with the local berries or the cherries or whatever it was in the garden. And so we had that, but we also had, thanks to Farm to School, which is the Public Health Association of BC, we had these really fun hot lunch moments, I'll call them. It wasn't a program, because there's already a hot lunch program at Neuheim. But we were trying to get as much, like the percentage of local food be very, very high. So we got beef from the Witwers, and then local tomatoes, local onions and garlic, and we made chili. And we were like, okay, can we get to 90% of this as being 90% local? And it just went into their hot lunch program. And we used our grant money to pay for the food and our wages to make it with the kids. So the kids were making their own hot lunch, which is not unheard of across the province. You'll see programs all over, bigger centers typically, but even in smaller centers. And for me, that was like, if this is possible, like a hot soup that's nourishing, and there was a vegetarian option too, then how about we do more of that, like, and get the Ministry of Education, Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Environment all like pitching in, because these are all things that just make sense for the health of our children and for their developing skills and autonomy as they get older. And it is happening, like there is a pot of money right now allocated to the schools. It's just not humongous. And obviously smaller schools get less money. So, and our valley has smaller schools, but there are really good outcomes to having the kids make their food, or having a person come and make the food and the kids can serve, but just having a little bit more of a connection with where the food comes from. We have a facilitator in Telkwa School, Heather Sosnowski, who does soup days regularly with the garden food of the Telkwa Gardens food. And that was a partnership with their PAC, their Parent Advisory Committee. And it shows like we need parents to support this, not just the teachers. And we also have the district, SD54 has been really supportive at most of the schools to help with some of the maintenance. They put up a fence at Muheim, for example, which is really important because there's like deer and other intrusions in the garden. And Heather is just, she was just a mom, not just a mom, but she wasn't necessarily part of Groundbreakers. And then she became the facilitator just from enjoying volunteering and seeing how excited the kids were. And so even if she doesn't have children at the school anymore, she's still going there, and we're really grateful for what she's doing. And it's mostly around the cooking. A lot of the classes, the teachers want help with cooking. It's another, you can imagine taking a class of 25 into a kitchen. So you have to separate the groups, and you know, one group will do the soup and one group will do the bread and one group will do dessert. Like it's a long process, but it's so worth it.
For most of my life, I personally have been a hardcore forager, where I go out and I look for berries. But I've noticed the average person has been trained to be suspicious, fearful. They don't often take time to educate themselves. So what are participants doing in your Wild Foods Initiative? And am I right in thinking that the underlying goal is to plant courage?
Well, I'm intrigued by that. It's true that some of the students, or I'll just call them children and youth, some of them haven't been in the forest very much. Like they have a yard and they go to the park, but they haven't been in the forest. So just that exposure in a safe group, I think is great for everybody, but particularly for those who haven't ventured outside of the little neighborhood. Whether they're in kindergarten or grade 7, this is possible. I know adults who've never left the Vancouver pavement. So this happens everywhere. And so, yeah, there's a bit more of an openness, we hope, for those children to grow up wanting to explore, to be more curious. And so courage and curiosity would go together, I think, for this particular place. Now, for sure, the skill of identifying food becomes also an act of courage, possibly. But we don't want that. We don't want children to wonder if that's harvestable or not. So we tell them you don't touch anything, you don't eat anything unless an adult says it's okay. So they always have to ask. So that's probably the biggest thing. But in terms of the philosophy around getting kids out more often or themselves up more often, yes, I think our programs can help. And so that can answer what we actually do when we do a wild foods workshop. And Nika Ansgar, who is one of our facilitators for that program, so at this time of year, we're looking at rose hips and high bush cranberries and making them into a syrup. So that's one of the things that we do. We definitely tell the children about the merits of these very nice red fruit for their vitamin C content. And so we sometimes have that orange in one hand and one of the berries in the other, and we'll say, you know, which one do you think has more? Well, it turns out the rose hip has the most. Yeah, I think they get a little bit of knowledge of why this is good for you, and they obviously the skill to identify it. And then depending on who facilitates it, there's sometimes a quest, like there's all kinds of very interactive activities out there with looking for cards that end up making a puzzle. So they're not just going for a walk and like, on your right is a gooseberry, on your left, you know, it's a very interactive activity. And also we're trying to get them to stay warm. Like at this time of year, yesterday we were looking at 5 degrees, and on Monday I think it wasn't much warmer. So it's important to keep them moving and active and excited about what they're doing. The cherry on top of this activity is that they end up picking these berries, or sometimes it, like in the spring, it's nettle, so they have gloves, and so they have a pile of these harvested foods, and then they make something on the trail. So there's a portable table, there's a portable stove. So on Monday, Nika made the syrup to go in crepes. And so she had pre-made the crepes. And so each student was able to get a crepe with this syrup that they made on the trail. With what they do is they boil it and they strain it, and then they add a bit of local honey. And the students will just eat that. And it takes a while to make the crepes, even if you make them ahead of time. So they can't have two, and they all want two or three or four. And so it's a really nice little way to make sure they like it. You know, you give them a tiny bit of sugar. And with the beautiful color, the beautiful red. So those are sort of like our fall foods. And then in the spring, that we make stinging nettle pesto. It gives them an idea of what's possible from the forest. And this is definitely far away from the grocery store. And they quite enjoy the stinging nettle. Is not something when you look at it that you think would go on pasta, but as the years go by, some of the class have had it a few times. They're like, I can't wait. And it's like, that's what we want. We want them to be really positive about this experience and what it does for their five senses. So same in the garden, same at Wild Foods. We're really trying to engage their five senses. But obviously the taste is what kind of wins them over. Just being there. Sometimes if it's a nice day, we can sit with the students. And if they're younger, we'll do a sit spot. A little round rope that they sit in, and then they'll do their eyes closed and listen, and then they'll open their eyes and they'll look around, see what's around their sit spot. And sometimes they'll find a morel, and sometimes they'll find an ant, or there might be a slug, or there's all kinds of things to see, obviously, if you're still, and to hear, and to smell, and to touch. And so the taste is how we finish this off with. And then we pack her up, and then they go back, and we hope that they tell their parents how enjoyable it is to be in the forest. And I think, you know, back to my philosophy is like, if you care about something, you will protect it. So if you care about the forest, you will grow up as someone who will vote that way, will maybe find a career that way and be an activist in that situation, you know, to make sure that you're preserving the forest around you. I like your idea of courage, though. I think I'll think about what else we could do to help them with busting some barriers around going out in the forest.
I want to end this part of the episode with a quote from Václav Havel, who was a Czechoslovakian leader. He said, "Hope is not the conviction that something will turn out well, but the certainty that something is worth doing no matter how it turns out." You are listening to Tempest in a Stockpot, Agitating for Change in Northern BC. I'm Christine Bruce.
And I'm Brenda Barrett.
Before the break, Helen Flory was explaining how Groundbreakers Agriculture Association was making a difference in the lives of school children, encouraging more kids to be competent in their eating habits, just like the pine marten. Now, Helen will expand that conversation to include our entire community and how making competent eaters of children has a much broader impact.
Someone recently suggested to us that the answer is to bring community back into the system. Is that at least partly what you're trying to accomplish with your food preservation workshops and your CD Saturdays?
I can't speak enough about Gail Jenny, because she had that passion for every age group. And for sure, she had started when there were the monthly harvest boxes to make sure that there was value-added products through the winter, because there weren't enough potatoes and carrots to go around. And so she would have like the sauerkraut making workshop as part of, you know, if you're a member of Groundbreakers Collective, you can come in and learn how to do a sauerkraut workshop. And so we just kept that up. So that's definitely her dream and her idea. And this is another thing that I'd like people to know about Groundbreakers is we are a registered charity. So yes, we appreciate all the donations, but we also are able to, quote unquote, house other people and their projects under our charitable status. And so we've had one-offs. For example, Eamon O'Donoghue and Jennifer Hegan did a local cheese workshop. It was well attended. That kind of thing where different people will offer an activity that is what they're passionate about. Because we've had Alana Petrella who did a kimchi workshop, and off we go. So there's definitely, you know, community goes without saying, whether it was Gail or Alana or Jen and Eamon, or even I'm remembering we had these little, it was mostly Gail, these edible gardens. They were like herb gardens all over the town of Smithers. And she had one at Pregnancy Outreach. There were like five or six of them. You know, there would have been basil and cherry tomatoes, that kind of thing. Yeah, definitely community, bringing both the food and the people together is important. I mean, we've had with the Farmers Market Association, those big fundraising dinners of local food. They're just really difficult to organize. Like it's a lot of work to do that, to feed 100 people. And at the same time, they're a great way to showcase all the local food that we have, but bring all the people who are excited about this together. And CD Saturday is another example of that. A little bit easier because you're not feeding 100 people. There is food, but it's not, you know, homemade from scratch for a meal. It's just little local snacks. But definitely CD Saturday, I think third year now. Making it a full circle, which was really good for me as an educator to, you know, Groundbreakers even in the schools, we would plant the seeds and weed and water and harvest and eat. But that's kind of where it stopped. It was like something was missing. And so now the kids get seed saving workshops, like, or as part of a harvesting workshop, right? And then where do we put the seeds, and where do we put them during the winter? And then where will we plant them? And how do we identify them? How do we make sure that they're the right seed? And how many of them will actually work? So that full circle, I think that's what's really neat about CD Saturday.
It feels to me like you're planting magic fairy dust everywhere in our community. And I love what Groundbreakers is doing it with all the whimsy and the practical uses and how many people have been affected by it. Thank you for this.
We have a very strong group of board members who are like so passionate, dedicated. They work hard. They have a meeting every month and they meet outside of that. And this is a very small nonprofit. So I really want to say thank you to the board and then all the facilitators over the years that have, like you say, like spread that dust. We do hope to continue. And in more schools, I think this is really important to be involved in direct contact with students, and the awe part was so important to me.
Policy and frameworks are often front of mind for me right now. So I'm just curious if in the different programs and even the different pieces of work, if you've come up against sometimes rules or policies or things that were in the way, that if they were changed would have, you know, would help this work go even further. Or perhaps there's been a policy put in place or some kind of, right, we often complain about the bureaucracy, but I think sometimes it can work for us too in terms of creating frameworks and creating direction that actually help amplify some of these programs.
Well, one of them is you're not allowed to cook in the classroom. And so if there's only one school kitchen and you have to book it, and at the moment, I don't think people are rushing to the school kitchen to cook every day, so it's okay. But there was a time when we would have like an electric pot or an electric burner, and then we'd do a stone soup workshop, right? And everybody would bring vegetables from their home or from their grandmother or their auntie or from the school garden. And we're not allowed to do that anymore. And that's fine. I mean, I'm just saying that's a new policy in the province, I think. Another thing that we found is And I've been really pleased with SD 54, like what they've done at Muheim and really helping with the fence. And then they put a concrete pad to put a new shed for the garden tools, because it was, you know, the shed that was there before was a little bit harder to get in and get the stuff out. And so I think there's been a newfound desire to be part of this. So, but for a period of time, I mean, the fence, this is the thing, a fence goes two ways. It means kids can't just go and look during recess. And so that was a debate for years at Muheim, whether or not they should put a fence. And I think in the end, it was a good idea, because it's so frustrating if there's no vegetables when the kids come back in the fall after all that work. And it's for them. Like, they should have a bin of vegetables that they can eat, or at least, you know, mint and some of the chives and stuff. So that's one of them. And then one of the biggest things, and it's not a policy, but it is a barrier, is compost. And compost attracts wildlife and mice, and it smells badly. And so if you have a garden, you kind of need to have a compost program. And I think in the 90s, it was a little bit more easier, early 2000s, to have compost programs. There was more people with vermiculture programs and coming to schools, and that, I don't know what happened. It makes the whole process more complicated, because you have all this food waste, the leaves of the bringing the brassica up, because it's just, they're so big, and it's like, where do you put them? And do you need a volunteer parent to haul that out? Like, it has happened that it was the one teacher at Muheim who did all that for years and years and years, and would turn the little compost that was there, but would haul the stuff out to her property. Maybe composting is something we need to get back into. Maybe not groundbreakers. Maybe there's an opportunity for a new social entrepreneur to start composting workshops again and building composts with the kids. I know at École La Grande Ourse, they just did that, put an outdoor one for garden waste. I think their lunch waste is going into one of those new fancy make dirt out of your compost on the counter, because it's not a very big school, so that they can, it won't smell. It will be just right there. It just makes it less attractive if compost smells and if there's mice. But in terms of policy, yeah, the only thing I come up with after is about the school food program that the federal government actually said yes to a couple years ago, and that trickled down to the province. It's just not enough money, but it's still an amazing start for having more local food in the school. And then local, it's pretty generous. It's BC food. So they really make you buy BC food, but it would be even better if they said local to your region, not to your municipality. And that's a positive policy, or a positive, it was a bill basically. So yeah, the one thing that was the vision for many years was we wanted a garden in every school. And we wanted every single student in the district, whether they were, was it the Francophone school or Heartwood, which is part of School District 71, have access to a garden and see the beauty of that growth and eating from the garden. And so I was just walking down the street, a garden every school, garden every school. How do we do that? So we did approach every school and say, hey, we've got a bit of money, we can help you grow a garden. And not every school said yes, and we were shocked. But for the most part, we're in four schools. Like Heartwood is now really autonomous, and then they do that as part of their schooling now. And Heartwood is blended education, so that they do have these face-to-face days where they have outdoor education opportunities. So gardening totally makes sense with that. And École La Grande Ourse has some amazing garden heroes in there. So it's like, they're also very autonomous with their garden. And Muheim has also very amazing teachers that are garden heroes, but it's just a bigger school. And so they can't facilitate their own workshops with that many classes. And then I've talked about Telqua and Walnut. Walnut, we're just getting back into it. There's a new principal there and a new opportunity to start increasing their garden size and offering workshops. And then Houston, we've tried and we'll try again, because there's children there too. With our grants, we're bound, or at least some of the grants that we have, we need to support public schools. And St. Joe's, I know they have an amazing kitchen and they have an amazing hot lunch program that the parents support. And then the Christian school, BVCS, has amazing gardens. And so the Christian school students have probably good soups there too.
I want to see this for all children.
This podcast was generously funded by the Public Health Association of D.C. Brenda Barrett is my co-lead and the executive director of the Storytellers Society in Hazleton. Technical production by Christine Bruce. Music by Elijah Larson. Our food expert in this episode was competent eater Helene Fleury of Groundbreakers Agriculture Association in Smithers. For more information on this or any other episode of Tempest in a Stockpot, visit storytellerssociety.org/tempest. Thank you for sharing this meal with us. I'm Christine Bruce, reminding you to stir that pot and to eat more like the pine marten, encouraging curiosity and joy in every meal and for everyone in your community.